Welcome to the Hold My Juice Box podcast, where we talk about motherhood and entrepreneurship. I'm Christina Zimmerman, a top producing real estate agent, business owner, coach, and mom of two great boys. This podcast is for all the women out there navigating through motherhood and building big businesses. My goal is for this to inspire, motivate, and encourage you as we go from surviving to thriving in motherhood and business. Hey, everybody. Today, I'm here with Miranda Hoppeck, and you might remember that we did an interview with her not that long ago. It was a few episodes back, and she was just so fantastic and so inspiring with everything that she was talking about, but I really felt like we just scratched the surface of her story and what she had to offer as far as everything she's gone through and how she got through it and where she is today. So I decided to bring her back. We want to get more deep into kind of her history and where she is now. So Miranda, do you want to start with any new mom stories or stories about the kids before we jump in?
Oh gosh, I can always have a story about the kids, you know? So it's just like, where do you start with that? You know, I think one of the most recent things that has happened is Jeremiah's football season, his spring season, recently came to an end, and we had an end of the season football barbecue, and there was this macaroni and cheese there, and Jeremiah loves macaroni and cheese, right? So he just keeps going back and getting plates of macaroni and cheese. And one of the other team players came over and he was like, man, Jeremiah really likes macaroni and cheese. And I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, he does. He ate 5 plates of macaroni and cheese. And I looked at Jeremiah and Jeremiah goes, they're not lying.
Growing teenage boy.
God bless my 14-year-old, you know, 6'5", 260 pounds, gentle giant football player. He just looks at me and he goes, they're not lying.
I remember one of my cousins, they had 3 boys and 1 girl. And when they were teenagers, like, she would eat so much food whenever we would hang out. And it's like, 'cause she would never get food when they were home. She'd have to fight for it, 'cause the other 3 boys would just eat everything in the house. So
yeah.
Yeah. Well, and just a reminder, so Miranda has 3 kids, and what are their ages now?
They are 12, 13, and 14. So Gemma, Jaden, and Jeremiah.
All right. And just some background, and then we'll get into all of the goodies. Miranda was in the military. Her husband was in the military. They are both on a new adventure now. So her husband is officially retired, and Miranda is a loan officer. So they've had a lot of transitions. They've been through a lot of crazy things in their life. Now, Miranda, since we last talked, has recently opened a new office in Twin Falls, Idaho.
Twin Falls, Idaho. Yep. Yep. So I'm very, very lucky and so lucky and happy that when I came to Idaho, there was a part of me that had some fear of being a new lender and a new company in town. And I came onto a mortgage company that was already established in town and found, you know, a great team. The team grew organically from just, you know, 2 loan officers, 3 loan officers, to then, you know, having 5, 6, and 7 loan officers. And then we all transitioned over to Cornerstone Home Lending, which is the same company that I had opened my own branch of out in Washington. And the company as a whole is just absolutely spectacular. Faith-based company, their core values and their mission and their vision is just unparalleled in any business standard that I've ever seen. So their true care for their employees and for their clients is unsurpassed. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. So I was very, very fortunate and very lucky that I was able to introduce the team to Cornerstone Home Lending. And the whole team all moved over to Cornerstone Home Lending in October and just had our grand opening this past Friday. So we had a great turnout, lots of people, lots of sunshine, food trucks, balloons, and cookies. I mean, it was just a fantastic time.
That's great. So yeah. Miranda has done everything from, like I said, the military to lending to a director of a chamber of commerce to back to lending. She's opened more than one office for Cornerstone. So yeah, she's definitely a go-getter. So what we wanted to get into though, so last time we talked a lot about your professional history and everything that you overcame on the professional side and what you grew into and how you care so much about the people that you work with. But you have such a deep history in your personal life that I think is very important to discuss and get out there, because a lot of listeners have different challenges going on in their lives and they might not feel like they could ever get to this point that you're at right now. And I mean, you're about to embark on this incredible summer vacation, like this epic vacation with your family. And if you look at everything you've been through in your past, I'm sure you never thought you'd be at this point. So that's why we really want to talk about all of the challenges that you've overcome and how you did it and where you are now and how you're at this point of just peace and abundance. So this is going to be a deep episode. There might be some tears and definitely some trigger warnings, and we'll have those in the notes as well. But I think if you can hang in there with us through all of this, you're going to see how just inspiring Miranda's story is. So Miranda, why don't you give us kind of a background and a timeline of your personal life?
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel, first off, I want to say I'm very, very fortunate to be where I am and who I am today. And everything that has happened in my past had to happen exactly how it happened for me to be who I am and where I'm at today. And I am incredibly proud of who I am and where I'm at. I'm not proud of some of the decisions and choices that I made, especially as an adolescent. But again, all of that had to happen to shape who I am today. And I am very much at peace with who I am and proud of who I am and what I put forward in life now.
Just to point out, one of the things that, you know, a lot of people talk about with seeing successful women is you think, I mean, you're seeing them at this high point in their life, they finally achieved it, and you just assume they've always had it made. So no. I think that's why it's so important. You said you made some mistakes and things that you're not proud of, but that happens. And you know, you look at you now, you keep moving forward. So yeah, keep going.
Absolutely. So I really didn't get a super great start in life. When I was born, I was born with a gangrene in my hands and in my toes because my parents had a pretty rough relationship, and it caused stress on me when I was in the womb, and I chewed on my hands and feet. And the story that my mother tells me is that the doctors told her if I would have been born 4 hours later, I would have lost my hands. And 8 hours later, I would have lost up to my elbows. Anything past that, it would have been so far into my system that they don't know that they could have saved me. So I was kind of born into this little bit of turmoil. And I guess I decided then, without even having any real cognitive thought, that I was going to be a fighter. You know, my parents had a pretty rocky relationship, and my parents ended up splitting up when I was about 3 months old. And my dad had custody of me and my brother, and he met my stepmom, who is my mommy, and I love her to death. And I was able to have, you know, a really positive relationship with my stepmom, you know, none of that evil, wicked stepmom stuff. You know, I mean, she truly, truly cared for and loved us. And my mom was kind of in and out of our lives, and with a little bit of inconsistency. So, you know, I kind of felt some some early abandonment issues there, especially with not understanding why my mom left and why my parents couldn't work it out and why we were seeing my mother so so infrequently and sporadically. So that was an issue for both me and my older brother. And my brother, I think, had a much harder time with it than I did. And I think it was because he was a little bit older than me. He's 15 months older than I am. But yeah, so we had, you know, so we had some rough stuff to kind of go through as kiddos. And it's not that uncommon, you know, for lots of kids to come into that kind of situation with a family life and to overcome it. But then where my situation gets a little bit unique was that as I started being more involved in my mother's life and some of the men that were coming and going in her life, you know, there ended up being some more mental and emotional and physical and sexual abuse that started, you know, when I was pretty young. And you know, at one point I had tried to tell my brother that that this was going on, and God bless his heart, I mean, he was the only person in this world that had never left my side. You know, he had never chose anybody else over me. As much as I love my dad and my stepmom, there was a part of me that felt like my dad chose somebody else, you know, over me. He chose this woman who I love to death. And then eventually, my mom took us out of that situation and moved us in with her new husband. And things seemed to be going really, really well. This new man was very exciting and energetic, and he had children also. So I had a new sister and a new brother, and it was fun. You know, we moved to a farm and started learning different things about animals and farming, and you know, it was super exciting. But then they would start drinking. And when they were drinking, there was a lot of yelling and there was a lot of things getting thrown around the house and getting broken. And then there was a lot of apologies the next morning. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was in eighth grade, I had gone and spent the night at a friend's house, and I was going to go to school the next day. And before I went to school, their parents dropped me off at home so I could just get a quick change clothes and grab my book bag. And I walked up to the back door, and there was blood all over the floor in the back entryway and a broken window. And I didn't have any idea what happened. And my mom and my then stepdad, neither one were home, and I didn't know what was going on. And I got to school, and one of the boys, whose parent is a volunteer first responder, asked me if I was okay. And I said, I don't know. I don't know what happened. And he said, well, my parents just told me to be kind to you today.
Oh, geez.
So I then went to the office to try and find one of the teachers at the school, who was my stepfather's sister. The office didn't know where she was at. They thought she might be in her classroom. So I went and I looked for her. And my aunt then told me at that point that my mom and stepfather had gotten into a pretty bad fight. And my mother had called for help. And my stepfather's dad came over, ended up throwing my stepfather through the window, and cut my stepfather up, and my mom got beat up pretty badly. So, but at that point it was like, oh my gosh, you know, what is going on? I mean, like, there's been some fights and there's been some things broken, but now, you know, hands are being put on each other. And I remember being so afraid and not knowing if my mom was okay or if my stepdad was okay, because when times were really good, they were amazing. And I loved him so much. But when times were bad, they were really, really bad. Mm. And, you know, and as most abusive situations progress, they start out, you know, with minor things, and then they continue to build and build and build and build. And unfortunately, my mom stayed in that situation with me and my brother. And my brother and I ended up being in the situation where we were being, you know, being hit and being abused mentally, emotionally, and physically. And I remember my brother putting me in a closet one night with a shotgun.
Oh my
God. And telling me that if he opened the door that I needed to shoot him. And my brother stood outside of my bedroom door. And I don't really know what all happened. I could just hear sounds and yelling and hitting. And there were a lot of times that I look back on that moment and thought to myself, why didn't I just jump out of that closet and shoot him? Nobody would have prosecuted me. Nobody would have held me accountable for that, you know, but I'm glad I didn't, because then that would have been something that I'd had to live with the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And as difficult as that was, again, it helped shape who I am. And, you know, eventually I was able to, you know, to get out of that situation and, move in with my grandparents. And things started getting a lot more positive, you know, as far as the mental and emotional and physical abuse. You know, living with my grandparents was a very bright spot for me. My grandma taught me a lot of things that that, you know, I never knew how to do. I didn't really know how to cook very well. But my grandma made dinner every single night, you know, a meat, a potatoes, and a vegetable. So I started learning some of those, you know, some of those life skills, but yeah, it was kind of turmoil for, you know, for a little while until, you know, until I graduated high school. So I lived with my grandparents for my last 2 years of high school, and yeah, those were good times. Those were good years. So as much hecticness as was going on kind of in the background, I had a safe place that I could go back to at the end of the day and curl up on the, in a ball on the couch with my nanny and my papa.
Oh, wow. I'm sure there was a lot of healing probably during that time. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so yeah. So, you know, at that point, I was, you know, I was graduating high school. I had also found out when I was 14, that I had a polycystic ovarian syndrome. I was having a lot of pain and stuff in my lower abdomen. And my mother had had uterine cancer when she was 22 and had to have a complete hysterectomy. So, so we started having, you know, pretty regular checkups for me when I was pretty young, as soon as I started, having my cycle, and, was having a lot of pain, a lot of heavy bleeding. I found out I had polycystic ovarian syndrome when I was 14. So, so that was kind of a blow too, because, I had always known that I wanted to be a mommy. I had a younger brother that was born when I was, almost 3 years old, and, thank God I can say this out loud because he's deaf and he'll never hear me. But he's my baby.
Aww.
He's my baby brother and I love him to death. So it was hard to hear at 14, you know, that I might not ever, get pregnant. I might not ever be able to have kids. So there was a lot of healing that was trying to take place, for a lot of different reasons, you know,
yeah.
As I was 17 and 18 years old. And then when I graduated high school, you know, I was grown and I was, you know, ready to move out on my own. And I did. I'd started working very young. I'd started working in high school. I actually had my first job when I was 9 years old. And, I was working at a greenhouse, planting seeds in flats, you know, and I got 25 cents a tray. you know, so I'd been working and I was at the point where, I had to take care of myself and I couldn't continue to let other people take care of me is what, you know, I had in my mind. I was grown and, moved out on my own and, you know, was working and had a good relationship. But at that point I didn't realize that I was just kind of, surviving. And I wasn't actually dealing with anything in my past as much as I was just trying to keep it suppressed. You know, so then my relationship that I was in, the love of my life, you know, that ended. And I was kind of lost. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have this person there to help take care of me anymore and for me to lean on, and started making some pretty poor choices. I started, using some drugs and hanging out with people that I shouldn't have been hanging out with. And, and that escalated a little bit. I mean, it started out with just pretty minor marijuana use. But, you know, there were some other things that were going on, some other drugs. My brother was also very much into that place then at that point, too. And I think he was trying to mask his pain and find a way to kind of deal with all of this stuff that now here we were 18 and 19 years old, living on our own, in our own, own places, and trying to process how to make it through life when we weren't in that survival mode anymore. Mm-hmm. So my brother was, was getting into a little bit of trouble and doing drugs, and I was getting into trouble and, doing drugs right there with him. And then my brother got deeper into drugs, and I said to my brother at one point, I think we need to slow down. You know, I'm starting to get really worried about the road and the path. And my brother was, was upset with me, and he's like, "Oh, it's all, fun and games while we're partying, but." Then you want to come back and say, that this isn't the lifestyle you want, but then you'll still go out and party. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's right. I'm not setting the example. So I stopped smoking marijuana, and my brother continued, to do some drugs and to deal. And then he got caught. He got caught trafficking drugs from the South up to Illinois, where we were from. And I was absolutely devastated. My brother had been caught by the Oklahoma State Police, and he was hundreds of miles away. There was nothing I could do. And, they were trying to bring him up on federal drug trafficking charges.
Oh, wow.
And, eventually my brother ended up getting sentenced to 18 years in prison, I believe. And he served 12 years or 13 years in prison. And that was a very, very difficult time for me when he got that sentence, because now I didn't have my brother anymore. The only person that that I had felt like stood by me through absolutely everything. He was my ride or die. If he and my mom were fighting, or he and I were fighting, he was sticking up for me and I was sticking up for him. When she got mad and kicked him out of the car on the side of the road, miles and miles and miles away from our house, I jumped out of the car to walk with him. He's just always been my rock. So it was a really, really devastating time for me when he got in trouble and got sentenced to prison and was so far away from me. And I had to figure out then at that point, was very pivotal in my life. And did I want to continue on the path that I was on and, potentially end up in prison or worse, or did I want to try and adapt and overcome and make something? I just decided, that I was more than that. I was meant to be more than that. And I had enough positive experiences in my life that I knew that there was a lot of positivity out there. But I had to choose that. Every situation, every scenario is an opportunity to make the choice to adapt and overcome, or to not, to learn a lesson or to not learn a lesson, to choose peace or not. So.
And how old were you at this time?
I was about, I was 21 roughly right then.
Okay.
So
yeah. That's a pretty mature realization, you know, and that takes a lot of determination to do a complete shift like that.
Absolutely. And it wasn't easy. And I can't say that I snapped my fingers and said, oh, I'm going to be, I'm going to overcome everything. You know, there were times when I did not make the right choice in that situation, but part of that was then, you know, I didn't make the right choice. And now I have another situation. I have another scenario where, I can either continue on this path or I can choose another path to betterment. So it wasn't always, you know, hearts and roses and, oh, you know, choose A or B, and I'm going to choose A every single time. There were times when I definitely chose B, you know, I went out and got drunk, and I drove home. Thank goodness the cop pulled the car over next to me instead of pulling me over, because then that would have been me getting a DUI and then trying to recover from that. So I didn't always make the right choice, even when I had this time in my life where it was like, I need to make something better of myself or I'm going to end up in prison or dead. There was still lots of times where I didn't make the right choice, but it was how you recovered from the wrong choice too.
Yeah.
I was right at, you know, 21 years old. I was going to college also. So I had kind of tossed around in the back of my mind, you know, that maybe I'd join the military and get out of, you know, this landlocked state and go see some stuff. My family was very, very important to me. So my grandparents, very important to me. My dad, my stepmom, my younger brother, very, very important to me. And I had recently found out that I had a sister. That was, my dad didn't know, he had had a daughter, prior to me. So, I had just found out that I had this sister, a few years prior and was trying to, you know, create a relationship and a bond with her too. So I was going to college and, I mentioned earlier that my younger brother's deaf. So I've been doing sign language since I was, you know, a little girl. At one point I had more sign language vocabulary than I had spoken vocabulary. So wow. I went to school to be a sign language interpreter. I thought, oh, I'll go to school to be something, you know, that I already know it'll be easy and I'll graduate and I'll start working and making lots of money. Yeah, no, that's not exactly how that happened. I ended up getting done with college and, you know, taking my exam and my certification test to be a sign language interpreter. And the market was so flooded with sign language interpreters at that time that I couldn't get like a solid job. And people were telling me that I needed more experience. I have been signing since I was 2 years old. You know, how do I not have experience? Oh, well, I didn't have experience on the books, you know? So it was very frustrating to me. And there was just a lot kind of going on. I was finishing school. My brother had recently gotten, you know, arrested and was in a jail in Oklahoma. And then when he got sentenced, some of the people that my brother was associated with started contacting me and wanting me to kind of pick up where my brother left off.
Oh, wow.
And it was very scary to get a phone call one day as I'm walking through the quad at my college, this person on the other end of the phone that I have absolutely no idea who they are telling me that my outfit looks lovely today.
Hmm.
Yes.
Wow.
So, you know, I knew I needed to do something that was a drastic change. You know, I decided that I was going to join the military. So I did. And I talked to a few different recruiters. I talked to my uncle who had been in the Air Force. My dad has his private pilot's license and has a little airplane. And I really would enjoy spending time with my dad. And like he would come pick me up and we would fly somewhere for breakfast or fly somewhere for lunch.
Oh, wow.
So I had this emotional connection to aircrafts. So I said I wanted to work on airplanes. And my uncle said, well, if you want to work on airplanes, you need to join the Navy, not the Air Force. And that was totally foreign to me. I was like, that makes no sense at all. But then I learned at boot camp that the United States Navy has the world's largest Air Force.
It's your little, I thought that was so funny when I learned that too.
I know, right? So I joined the Navy and, you know, and was really starting to turn my life around. right before I joined the Navy, I actually had to get a waiver to join the Navy, because right before I had made that decision, I was 22, and I had found out that I had cervical cancer. So I had to go in and have a pretty large portion of my cervix removed. And at 22, the doctors told me then that there would just be no way that I would ever, if I ever got pregnant, my cervix would never withstand the weight of carrying a child to full term, and that I would spontaneously abort a child at some point. And that was really hard news to hear. And you know, there's just a lot going on, you know, thinking about joining the military and all this going on with my brother, and, you know, still had some turmoil going on with my mom, and her abusive husbands. So, you know, coming to my mom's rescue as much as I could. So it was hard for me to make the choice to leave, but I did. And I joined the Navy, and I had my 23rd birthday at boot camp. So, wow. Yeah. The military was the best thing I could have ever done for myself. It definitely made me hone in on what the good qualities of me were and what I wanted to be, and gave me the structure and the support to do that.
Wow.
So yeah, I was very, very, very fortunate that the military was a great fit for me. And I would encourage absolutely anybody to join the military and get some life experiences and some discipline and some determination, because I think it was just an absolutely phenomenal time in my life, and allowed me to meet my husband. So, you know, here I am, 23 years old and just out of boot camp, and get stationed down in Florida. And I meet this very handsome young man. You know, he and I were both going through the same rating school. And, you know, we thought that we'd have fun while we were there together, because our school was, you know, 8 months long. And when we went our separate ways, we had fun in Florida. My husband knew that he was going back to Whidbey Island, Washington. He had been in the Navy prior to me joining, and then he was going through a cross-rating school, and that's how he met me. So he joined the Navy when he was just 18 years old, and then I joined when I was, like I said, 23. So we meet in Florida, and he's 22 and I'm 23, and we're just having a great time. And he's about 2 weeks away from leaving Florida. He knows he's going to Whidbey Island, Washington. And he says, you know, I think we need to break this off now. You know, there's a lot of attachment and feelings going on. And, you know, I think that we need to just end this now for both of our sakes. And I told him, no, that wasn't the deal. You know, the deal was that when we left Florida, we would go our separate ways. But I was so in love with him. I really was. And I didn't want that to end yet. So so I told him no, he couldn't break up with me. And then a few days later, I got my orders that I was getting stationed in Whidbey Island, Washington.
So wow.
I tried to play the young and naive new sailor that didn't know how to read her orders, and asked my now husband if he would mind looking my orders over and telling me kind of what they said, you know, where I was going and stuff. And the look on his face when he said, "Wow, you're going to Whidbey Island, the same place I'm going to." I was like, "Oh, shoot, you want to come from the airport and show me around?" You know? So yeah, so I mean, I feel like it was kind of meant to be for he and I to be together. And he did pick me up from the airport, and he did show me around. And now here we are, getting ready to celebrate 15 years of marriage next month.
So at one point, and congratulations on the anniversary that's upcoming, at one point you ended up getting out of the military.
I did.
So talk a little bit about that.
So the Navy was going to be my forever. I wasn't ever going to have kids. I wasn't able to have kids. And, you know, it just kind of sealed the deal for me that I could travel and I could go see the world and I could do whatever I wanted to do and not be tied down. But we all know from, you know, the introduction that I do have three kids. So my husband wanted to try. He said, can we at least try? And I told him that that I would try just once, but that I knew that I wouldn't be able to carry a baby. And I had had a miscarriage shortly before I joined the Navy. And that was really what sealed the deal for me, that I just knew that I wouldn't ever have a child. But I told him that I would try for him. And we tried a lot. And it didn't happen, and it didn't happen, and it didn't happen. And then he was getting ready to go on deployment. And we had talked a lot about marriage. He called my dad and asked my dad if he could marry me. But he wouldn't marry me until I had gone through a deployment, which is understandable because he'd been in the military for some time, and he'd seen so many of his brothers and sisters in arms going on deployments and coming back to failed relationships and wrecked marriages. And he didn't want that for us. I guess, you know, we'll plan this wedding for when you get back. So I started planning a wedding, and about 10 days after he left on deployment, I found out I was pregnant.
Oh, wow.
So, so I found out I was pregnant with our son, Jeremiah. I was terrified. I was afraid that I was going to have this this pregnancy and this failed pregnancy without him by my side. And little did I know that the scar tissue from my cervical cancer is actually what held my babies in.
Oh, wow.
So I wasn't able to have a natural delivery with any of my kids because that scar tissue didn't allow my cervix to dilate or anything. But that's also kind of what held them in there. And I was able to be pregnant the whole time that Jake was on deployment. And he came home to a very large fiance. But we ended up getting married and had our son Jeremiah by cesarean, and you know, life was great.
You talk a lot about looking back at the things that have happened in your life and being able to appreciate them on some level. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a perfect example to be
Absolutely. Sitting
there with cervical cancer going, why is this happening to me? And then later on see, wow, this is
why.
Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we weren't quite ready to get pregnant again when we got pregnant with Jaden, but you know, that's how deployment cycles work. So that's how that happens, you know? You know, so we've got this, you know, this beautiful little baby boy, and then holy crap, we're pregnant again. And Jaden was born, and I had some complications with her during pregnancy. I went into preterm labor. I found out my sister and I have a hereditary gene modification. My sister was pregnant with her daughter, Sophia. Sophia ended up being delivered stillborn at 39 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Due to this gene modification that we have that causes problems with an unborn baby. Nutrients not crossing over the placenta and blood clots forming. Mm. And my sister had just lost her baby. I was pregnant with my baby and starting to have these pregnancy complications. And we thought that it was just because of this gene modification. But we found out later that it actually wasn't gene modification, which is good. But my doctors just put me on some medications to help stop the labor and help nutrients, you know, get crossed over to our daughter. And then we were able to have Jaden delivered at almost 40 weeks by cesarean. Wow. And this beautiful little baby girl, and life was great for about 3 days because that's when Jake got taken on deployment again.
Oh gosh.
So left me on active duty to maintain my military service and two kids under 2 years old.
Oh, so you were still active duty during all of this.
Yes, I was still active duty. Yeah. So Jake comes back from deployment 7 months later, and Jaden is now 7 months old. Anybody that's very familiar with deployments and military knows that, you know, a lot of times when you're on deployment, especially on the ship, everybody gets the boat yuck, like either right when they get on the ship or just as they're getting ready to get off deployment. You know, there's so many different people all in this, you know, little tin box, you know, sharing germs with each other. And my husband got the boat yuck right before he got home from deployment.
Oh, no.
And got our son sick, and Jaden sick also. And I remember Jake looking at me and telling me that this isn't how it's supposed to be. You know, we're not all supposed to be sick when, you know, when I get back from deployment, it's supposed to be a great and happy time. But it was okay. You know, we had doctors, we had medication, and Jake got better and Jeremiah got better and Jaden didn't. Hmm. And I was so hyper-focused on her because she was so little. She was just a baby. She was only 7 months old. She had this fever that just wouldn't stop, wouldn't go away. It would spike out of nowhere. She wasn't breathing quite right. So I kept taking her to the doctor, and I thought that she had pneumonia that they just couldn't hear. And I begged them to do a chest x-ray. And Jaden's doctor, after the third time at the doctor in about 2 weeks, you know, her doctor told me that I needed to stop. She looked me dead in the face and said, "Petty Officer Hoppick, you're being a paranoid mom. You need to stop. Your daughter is fine." And I said, "Okay, roger that, ma'am." And the very next morning I called the Navy hospital, Naval Hospital Oak Harbor. And I said, "I want to see the on-call pediatrician, not my daughter's pediatrician, the on-call pediatrician." So they got us in to see Dr. Ralston. And I think probably more than anything, just to pacify me, he did the chest x-ray. And he said, "But, you know, let's just go ahead and rule out some other things too. And we'll do a urinalysis and make sure she doesn't have like a urinary tract infection or something that's, you know, continuously spiking this fever." And they got the urinalysis back and they said, "Well, while you're over at x-ray, you know, waiting to get the chest x-ray done, go ahead and stop into the lab and get her blood drawn. There's some stuff that kind of came up off in her urinalysis. We just want to, you know, do a general CBC blood panel on her." And I said, "Okay." So we go, we get the chest x-ray, go over to the lab, get the blood drawn. We go back into the doctor's office. His email dings that the x-ray is in. So he says, "Well, just come on over here. I'll let you look at this x-ray with me." And he pulls up the x-ray and I'm looking over his shoulder and I look at the x-ray and I said, "What is that?" And he kind of looks at it and he looks at the screen and he's like, "Well, you know, there's a lot of lymph nodes right there in that area. You know, she might have an infected lymph node. And that's what we're seeing here." And his phone starts ringing and he says, "That's the radiologist. Let me just talk to them real quick." And I looked across the hall at my husband and I said, "Jaden has a mass in her lung." And my husband said, "No, she doesn't." And I said, "Come look." So he did. And about that time, the doctor turns around and he said, "We need to send you guys to Seattle Children's Hospital immediately. Your daughter has a mass in her lung." So I went from being a paranoid mom to being an absolutely terrified mom because I had this little itty bitty baby and had no idea what was going on inside of her. But we got to Seattle Children's Hospital and they were waiting for us at the door and they did some further imaging and some further tests. And the mass that they thought was in her lung from the imaging on x-rays ended up being behind her lung, in between her lung and her rib cage, attached to her spine. And the nerves that controlled her vocal cords and was starting to grow into the left, push on the left ventricle, which is why she wasn't breathing right.
Wow.
And that's when we heard the words, "Your baby has cancer." And she had been diagnosed then at that point with neuroblastoma, which is an incredibly aggressive infancy cancer that starts developing in the womb. And most babies never make it to live birth because the mother's body aborts them. Mm. So, you know, now we kind of look back on, oh my gosh, you know, this is why we went into this preterm labor with her. And now we have a baby that has cancer, and how are we going to deal with this? How are we going to do this? You find a strength that you didn't know you had, or that you just have to have, because you know, what else are you going to do for your child? You can't break down and not be present for them. I looked back on some of the things that have happened in my life, in my childhood and my adolescence, and knew then that, you know, I had to experience those things to be able to be the strong person that I am at that point, for my children, for my daughter specifically. The Navy took great care of us. I had a fantastic division officer that happened to be married to my husband's maintenance warrant officer. And they made sure that the Navy wrote us TAD, temporary active duty orders, to Seattle Children's Hospital.
Oh, wow.
So we were stationed at Seattle Children's Hospital to be with our daughter. And wow. I will never, ever, ever forget those people that were so instrumental in doing that for us at that very difficult time. When Jaden got better, and she had her surgeries, and they removed the mass out of her chest and did nuclear medicine injections, which calcified the pieces of the tumor that were left behind. And
how old was she at that point?
She was 8 months old at that point.
Oh my gosh.
So she was 8 months old when she had her first surgery. And then she started doing the nuclear medicine at that same time also, but she didn't have to do chemo and radiation. So we're very, very thankful and blessed that she didn't have to go through that at such a young age. Mm-hmm. She did have to go through some hard stuff though, you know, and it was very difficult for her to do those very adult things as an infant. Mm-hmm. And it had some lasting effects on her, which I understand. You know, she would get forced to go to sleep, wake up in excruciating pain. That would make anybody afraid to go to sleep. So she had nightmares and just absolutely horrific night terrors. And until she was about 10 years old, she only slept through the night about 5 times.
Wow.
Because she just, yeah, was terrified to go to sleep and would wake up with these awful, awful screaming fits. It was hard to maintain, you know, the composure that I needed to have and my military bearing that I needed to have. So I was coming up on my 6-year mark in the military, and I had signed on for 8 years of active duty on my first enlistment because I knew the Navy was going to be my forever. I actually asked him if I could sign up for 20 on my first enlistment, and he said, no, that's not possible. I had the discussion with my upper chain of command that I wasn't in the right headspace to be in my shop and working on gear. I had been working on a piece of gear and accidentally discharged a bunch of capacitors right into my hand. And it kind of made me breathe funny for a little bit. I mean, it was quite a big shock. I just wasn't in the right headspace, and I was afraid to hurt myself or to hurt one of my brothers and sisters in arms. So the decision was made that I would go into the division office and do admin clerical duties until my 6-year mark, and then get off of active duty at my 6-year mark. So that's how I got out of the military. I gave up my my Navy career for my family, for my daughter, for my kids. And about the same time, found out that we were pregnant with Gemma.
Why not? Let's just throw one more thing in
there. I know, right? But I knew that there was no way that I was pregnant, because when I had Jaden, I had my tubes tied, because I have this thing about even numbers, and things being in balance, you know? So holy crap, you know, my baby has cancer. I'm getting out of the Navy. You're pregnant. No, there's no way that I'm pregnant. I knew that there had to be something else going on. that maybe I had ovarian cancer from the polycystic ovarian syndrome, or the cervical cancer had come back. There was no way I was pregnant. I had had my tubes tied. And sure enough, I was pregnant with Gemma. The thought of things being off balance, of having three kids instead of two, I really went into a tailspin with my mental health, and had just absolutely debilitating fears that Jaden was going to die. And that's why I was now pregnant with Gemma, was because there was no way that I could have three kids. So something was going to happen to one of them. That was a real struggle, for my mental health, and developed some really, really serious, OCD and PTSD symptoms. And thankfully, the military was, I still had military insurance through my husband, and they were very proactive in helping me get my mental health straight. That's and great. Helping me be present for all three of my kids when they were born. And that was something that was difficult for me, because I had struggled with the abuse and dealing with drug use as a way to mask mental health before I joined the Navy. But now here I was, dealing with these mental health issues again. And thankfully was able to seek, professional help and get that help. So that way I could continue to overcome these challenges that were being thrown at us and continue to determine my path instead of letting the scenarios determine my path for me. Mm-hmm.
Do you think if you hadn't had the military, you might have chosen to cope with that differently?
Absolutely. I absolutely think that I would have. Because it was very easy for me when I was young to cope with things by drinking or by drug use. But in the military, there was zero tolerance for that. And I didn't want to throw away everything that I had worked so hard to become then at that point. I was very, very proud of serving this country, of being in the military. And I was very proud of how proud my family was of me also. So I didn't want to risk that. And I definitely stayed as close to the military values as I could, because I didn't want to jeopardize anything and get my military time tainted in any way.
Right.
So that's how I ended up getting out of the military.
So you had, gone through so much as a kid, as a teenager, and then, with your brother getting sentenced, mm-hmm. that was a turning point. And then you had another turning point with the kids and the military and all these changes. What do you think really helped push you through? Do you think it was your determination or the people around you or a combination of things?
I think it was a combination of those things. It was definitely a combination of not wanting to let those around me down, but also that I knew there was more to me than the victim, than the victim of sexual abuse and, rape, molestation, and physical abuse. That wasn't going to be my label. Mm-hmm. But I had to make that determination that was not going to be my label, because it could have been very easy for me to make that my label and use that as a crutch and as an excuse. But if you really dig deep into yourself and choose to determine your own path, and choose to overcome, even when you make a bad choice, you can still overcome that bad choice. You just have to do that for yourself. And if you can't do it for yourself, do it for somebody else at first, mm-hmm. and then do it for yourself. Everybody says, that you can't make other people happy without being happy first. But I found that making other people happy made me happy also at times. So sometimes I didn't make the choice to do something for myself. I made the choice to do something for somebody else that then affected me positively. And I wanted that. I wanted more of that.
That's really good advice, because sometimes when you're down in that really dark place, doing it for yourself is, you could care less, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. I agree.
Yeah. So Jaden ended up getting better, right? But you got out of the military to kind of handle everything that you and your family were going through. And that I'm sure was a huge change for you, because you had it set in your mind that this was going to be your career and not an easy decision. So what did you transition into from there?
So the transition from military life to civilian is incredibly difficult, and you really get set in the ways of structure and of discipline, and it was very hard to lose all of that kind of instantaneously overnight. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I thought I'd be a stay-at-home mom, because that's why I got out of the military, you know, it was for my family. God bless any stay-at-home parent. They are stronger than me in spades, because I was not cut out for that job. That is a rough job. And I love my kids, but I was not a good stay-at-home mom. I needed more socialization than what I was getting, and I relied on my husband way too much. And it really didn't do good things for our marriage, and it really didn't do good things for our children either. My husband and I had the conversation, you know, that I needed to have something in my life that gave me more fulfillment also, and made me feel like I had a purpose. So I started sign language interpreting again, and was only able to do that part-time. And I was volunteering at my son's preschool, and then they offered me a position as a lead teacher. And as much as I love kids and love my kids, I'm not cut out for that either. teachers, God bless your souls.
I don't know how they do it.
I don't either. And I happened to stumble into mortgage by answering a blind ad on Craigslist for a front desk receptionist. And I was given an opportunity to be a front desk receptionist at a bank mortgage company. And that's how I got my start in mortgage. And I hadn't been at that job for probably a full 2 months when a deaf man walked through the door for an appointment with a loan officer. And he was going to have this appointment with his parents, and they were going to interpret for him, but his parents weren't there yet. And I offered to interpret for him. And he was thrilled that I knew sign language. And, you know, we chatted for a little bit, and then I went into this appointment with him and I helped interpret. And it was like doing something for the greater good again, you know, putting mm-hmm. people in homes, giving them their dream home, or a better financial situation. It was just like my heart swelled, and I knew that's what I was going to do. So that's how I got my start in mortgage. And I hadn't been at the company for a year when I started having some medical problems. Ended up having to have a hysterectomy 3 days after my 31st birthday. Mm-hmm. So, and that found that I had some really bad fibroids in my uterus and thickening of my uterine wall. They found some cancer on my uterus when they did the hysterectomy. So when they did my hysterectomy, they took everything except for one ovary. So that's all I had. Then at that point, it was very difficult for me to know that even though I didn't want any more children, we already had our perfect little family, that I was never going to carry a child ever again. That was very, very, very hard, but it was okay. And I had just found this new love of a career that I never even knew existed. And, you know, I recovered from my hysterectomy and came back to mortgage and, you know, said, I'm gonna make this happen. Within my first 2 years in the mortgage field, I started out as a customer service representative and worked my way up to a loan officer assistant And then was recruited by another bank to be their assistant vice president, mortgage loan officer. Yeah, so I did that, and yeah, was loving life, you know, and everything was going as good as it possibly could, you know. Started having some medical issues again, and found out at 33 that I had had a mass in my abdominal muscles from my hysterectomy. That usually when you have a hysterectomy, sometimes tissue can get left behind and it's, you know, your body absorbs it and disposes of it or whatever. But I had some tissue that got stitched into my abdominal muscle. And even though I had never had endometriosis, that tissue that got left behind started developing endometriosis, and I ended up developing an endometrial hemangioma in my lower abdominal muscles. So at 33, I had to have my lower abdominal muscles removed. Your six pack or your, you know, there's eight of them, I think, you know, they just took the lower two. I mean, up to this point with all of my medical stuff, I had been, in my opinion, very lucky that everything had been able to be what I consider to be a simple procedure, a simple surgery and done, you know, like a one and done kind of thing. So yeah, so it was kind of crazy, you know, that, you know, all this was happening. But I still chose to, you know, to be positive about things as much as I could, because I'd already had so much negativity. I'd already had so much bad stuff happen. But all of that had to happen that way for me to be strong enough for my daughter. And then my daughter had to go through her stuff. So that way we could overcome that as a family together, and show that, you know, as long as you are trying to live in abundance, abundance will come back to you. Even when bad things are happening, if you're putting the positivity out into the universe, positivity is going to come back to you.
And that's one way that I would absolutely describe you and your family. I mean, you guys are so giving and so just anything anyone needs, you'll give the shirt off your back. Or, I mean, I've seen you help so many people, and in your personal life and in the military and in your professional life. I mean, you go above and beyond for all of your clients. You just, and it's not one of those where you're expecting anything in return either. I mean, it's really just, you guys just give. And it's very apparent from the outside looking in that that's just where your heart is. So
there are times when I wonder if it's done selfishly also, because I know that when we give and when we care and when we help, that I get satisfaction out of that also. I get happiness out of that also. So no, it's not ever with the expectation of getting something in return, but it's not getting anything in return also, you know, because I do get that happiness from knowing that that we just made an impact on somebody's day, on somebody's week, on somebody's life.
So. Yeah. And that, I mean, with everything you've gone through, it would have been so easy to get bitter and angry. Oh, yeah. And you've done a complete 180 from that of finding happiness and helping others and in finding peace and showing your kids a good life.
It wasn't totally bitter free though at times. Like I remember when Jaden was, you know, was first diagnosed and being very angry and saying, and feeling very wicked afterwards and saying, why her? Mm-hmm. Why my baby? Why not somebody that deserves it? Mm. But then like I said, it felt incredibly wicked because nobody deserves that. Nobody deserves cancer. But why this little baby that has so much life to live and so much joy still to see? I just couldn't believe why that was happening. You know, but we found out why later. It was definitely something that our family had to experience so that way we could be strong enough as a family unit, you know, years later, when in 2018, so about 9 years later, when I was diagnosed with a very, very aggressive form of breast cancer. They've called this type of breast cancer the kiss of death. It was triple negative, Ki-67 positive, stage 3 breast cancer. And I had to undergo a complete and full double mastectomy. And I did 26 rounds of chemotherapy. And I've done multiple surgeries. Thankfully, I didn't have to do radiation. So I'm very, very blessed for not having to do radiation. You know, we had to go through Jaden's cancer and come out of it on the other side. So that way I could explain to my children, mommy was sick, but that it's just another day and we're going to get through it just like we got through Jaden's cancer. And it'll be, you know, it'll be a road that we traveled. So yeah, so it was rough dealing with Jaden's cancer. But again, there was reason for it.
That mindset is just incredible. I mean, to take those lessons and apply them in such a difficult situation. You mentioned that it was considered the kiss of death. And my mom has been a nurse for 25 or 30 years. Very, very good, successful, knowledgeable nurse. And she's very blunt. And so when I told her about your diagnosis, she said, okay, well, you know, she's probably not going to make it. So, you know, start praying for her and be a help any way you can. And if my mom says that, it's like, wow. And so I went to see you just for a work-related thing. No. It was a work-related thing. And this is one of my favorite moments of you. And I think I mentioned it in the other episode, you know, I'm sitting there thinking all this doom and gloom and trying to talk about work with you and everything. And I said, you know, how are you doing with it? You said, well, you know, we're just going to do the treatments and we'll get through this. I mean, let's just get this over with. And you Absolutely. Specifically said, I'm just going to get this over with. And I like just about fell out of my chair because I thought, who thinks like that? Like any, and I know you had very hard times and you thought, I'm sure had those moments where it was just, you know, figuring out how am I going to get through this, but you were determined and I could absolutely. See it. And it wasn't you were just telling yourself that it was,
no,
this is just, let's get this done so I can move on. And I think that was just so, so inspiring and just like, it was like, wow, I want to be like that because little things in my life, I would have a pity party over and you're over there just going, nah, yeah, we'll get it over with.
And, you know, I had to find the ray of sunshine in, you know, in the storm. And it was so funny because I had just told my husband a few weeks prior to finding this lump in my breast, you know, that we were joking around about all the surgeries that I had had, you know, with my abdominal muscles and the hysterectomy and, you know, just all these little piddly things, you know, I think of them as piddly things, I guess. And, I told my husband that, I thought my next surgery, needed to be new boobs.
Oh, well, there you go.
My husband says, no, you should totally get the eye surgery done. Cause he had LASIK done on his eyes. And I was like, what husband hears, I want new boobs and says, oh no, go get your eyes fixed.
That's a good husband.
So I get this diagnosis and it was like, huh, see, honey, I get new boobs.
Miranda, I love it.
I mean, we just had to make the best of it, you know, for our kids, and for me. If I would have gone into that whole situation thinking that it was going to be the end of the world and that I was not going to make it and my kids were going to be motherless, that's exactly what would have happened.
Yeah.
But I didn't. We went through it. And when the kids asked me if I was going to lose my hair, I said, absolutely. But you can color on my head and give me a beautiful tattoo, just like the tattoos on my back. And that's exactly what they did. They colored on my head. And I wore that with so much pride. And yeah, I lost all of my hair and that was really, really rough, you know, just like the trees lose their leaves in, you know, in the fall and in the winter, they come back. And it was hard. It was very hard, because you start to lose everything that identifies you as a woman, and it's hard to feel attractive and sexy to your husband or to your partner. But you just have to, can't dwell on it. I mean, it just really, you just really have to have that positivity mindset.
Is there something that you do to help keep that positive mindset when you feel like you're losing it?
You know, it's, it is impossible to feel anger, and gratitude at the same time. So, sorry, as I get comfortable here in my chair. So one of the things that I am a really big advocate of is, affirmations and gratitudes. So, and it's something that I do with my kids too. You know, like sometimes we make it a joke, when one of my kids is upset about something, I'll say, "What are you grateful for today?" And sometimes they need help. Like, it's first thing in the morning and they're having a rough morning. Well, what are you grateful for today? Nothing. Okay. Well, what were you grateful for yesterday? Did we go to dinner yesterday? Did we do something special? I am grateful for dinner. You know, how did we get to dinner? Oh, our car took us. I am grateful for our car. You know, then they eventually will come around to something that they are grateful for, and it helps shape their day.
And helps them. It teaches them how to get themselves in that right mindset. And it sounds so cheesy when you talk about affirmations and when you first start trying to do them in gratitudes, but it's funny that they actually work because, and there's all kinds of science behind it, but we've started doing it in the evenings. You know, especially like when we're eating dinner, and the other night we had all just had such a long day and everyone was in a mood and we're all sitting there and my 3-year-old's kind of fussy and not wanting to eat his food. And my husband is just at his wit's end because he, you know, work was the last straw that day. And so my 8-year-old goes, "Why don't we all say something good from today?" And so, of course, I'm like, "Oh, I'm such a good mom," because he knows to say that when we're all stressed out. But, you know, I was not in the mood. I was, none of us were. We were like, "Nope, this has been a rough day. We're all crabby and we're just going to be crabby." And he started with Colton, was my 3-year-old. He's like, "Colton, what's something good?" And Colton goes, "Purple." And so we start kind of cracking up, you know, and then he asks me and I was like, you know, whatever, something good from my day. And then he gets to my husband and my husband was just in the worst mood. And my husband goes, "I woke up today." And Ryan starts looking at him. He's like, "That's not good enough, Dad. You have to pick another one." And so we started all like teasing him. And by the end of it, we were laughing and it like completely changed the atmosphere of our evening. So it does work. And it's great that you're teaching your kids that. And I think that's great advice for someone who's in really in the dumps to just really force yourself to look at those things and it will help. So,
and write it down, and write it down in the present tense. Because when your brain and your mind sees you writing things down, doing those affirmations and doing those gratitudes, it makes it more real. And it's a discipline. You have to discipline yourself to do it. So it really does take a commitment to yourself to do that. But yeah, Gemma, she'll do kind of the same thing as Colton, or as Ryan, I mean, I'm sorry. And, you know, sometimes we'll be sitting around and, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a tense mood or whatever. And Gemma will just kind of look at me and go, "So how was your day today?" Aww. And I ask the kids a lot of times, now they're out of school for the summer, but I would say, "What was your favorite thing about today?" Not, "Did you have a good day at school?" Because then they can go, "Yeah, it was fine." What was your favorite part about today?
Yeah.
"Well, my favorite part about today was when so-and-so got hit in the face with a ball in PE, you know? And why was that your favorite part of the day? Well, because then I went over and helped them and walked them to the office. Aww. Oh, thank God. You know, not because you got a laugh out of it, but because you helped them.
That's so good though, because you know, this podcast is for moms and working moms, and our kids are watching us and they're learning from us. So if we're showing them these things, like, you know, sometimes they're really hard things. And sometimes it is really hard to get out of that total tailspin that you might be in. But here's how. And so she was able to recognize that that was a tense moment and how to address it versus maybe feeling anxiety and not knowing how to process or how to get through that moment. So that's so, so amazing. And so you've done all these things. You've done, you know, you've gone through so many challenges and you've really just come out on the other side in such a good place. And it's been amazing to watch you in the relatively short amount of time that I've known you. I mean, 5-ish years. But now to see where you are, you guys are living in your dream location and maybe, you know, moving on to another dream location, but you're all healthy, you're happy, and you're together and you have something very exciting coming up. So you opened this new office for Cornerstone. Everything is secure and settled there. So you get to go and do something exciting. What is that?
Yeah. So, with Jake recently, retired from the military after, 20 years, we really didn't have a whole lot of opportunity to vacation a whole lot. You know, we had some stuff going on and, we had military life. But I'm very, very excited to say that, me and Jake and our kids and our two cats and our two dogs, we are going to be RVing the country this summer. And we're going to take the kids on an epic vacation. We're going to go see the Grand Canyon and Florida, where Jake and I met, and Cape Canaveral and Myrtle Beach in South Carolina. And we're going to recreate some of the vacations that I had as a child and my husband had as a child. So a big camping trip with my dad and my brothers and sisters and all of our kids, you know, horses, trail riding and floating the river. And it's just going to be such an exciting and fun time. And we're just going to be present in our kids' lives and give them an experience that that hopefully they'll remember and want to recreate someday too.
Amazing. And when you were in those difficult times, I mean, did you ever imagine that this is where you would be now?
No. I mean, when you're in those difficult times, it's very hard to see through. You know, you have to make a determination that you know that there's more for you out there, and you're going to get past this, and it sucks right now. But if you can dream that something can happen, you can make it happen. You just have to be determined and you have to set your path, your goals, not let anybody else determine that for you.
And I love how honest you were about all those times where you pulled yourself back up in those transition times, that it didn't just happen overnight. You know, you watch movies and they show those inspirational scenes where, like, they're breaking through and it's like, you know, you got the music and it looks like it happens overnight, and it's so not how it happens in real life. So being honest that, you know, looking at you now, I would think that you've had this wonderful life, that it's always been successful and always been easy for you. And that's not the case at all. So just knowing that if you're in that space, keep going, you'll get there. You just got to hang in there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when times are really, 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 really hard, you know, you hear the saying, you know, when you hit rock bottom, the only way to go is up. But only you can make that choice to go up. And it's not an easy choice. And it's not a choice that's going to happen overnight. You know, today's not going to be rock bottom and tomorrow's going to be hearts and roses. It's going to take work to get you there. But you can get you there if you make that dedication to yourself. If you make yourself the priority, and you want better for yourself, you can do that. Anybody,
one step at a time.
Absolutely.
Even if it's a tiptoe, at least just keep moving, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So we're very excited for this summer. and to see where all our travels take us. Some of our trip is planned, some of our trip isn't planned. We'll just kind of see where the road takes us. We have another family that's traveling with us, very good friends of ours. You're familiar with them also. A fantastic connection that we made through our military time, you know, definitely a brother and sister in arms.
Really good people. Yeah. Well, I am so excited for you. And I know this was a pretty difficult story to share, but I think you are just such an inspiring person. And I know everyone else will see that too. And hopefully this helps people who, you know, might be going through a really difficult time just to see that how you can get out of it and that you can get out of it. So
absolutely.
Yeah, there's so much more. So thank you so much, Miranda, for sharing all this. And I'm so happy for you.
Yeah. If I can help just one person try and find, you know, a ray of light or a bright spot or a way to help them adapt or overcome or find their peace and abundance, you know, then it's worth it. Everything's worth it.
Yeah. In a personal life and in your business life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wonderful. So. Thank you so much, Miranda. And I might just have to like stow away in your RV with you so I can go on this trip, but I'm really happy for you. And I appreciate you doing this with me again.
Absolutely.
And we'll follow your adventures and can't wait to see where you go in the future.
Yep. I'll send you pictures.
All right. Thanks so much. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to click the subscribe button to make sure you're the first to know when new episodes are posted. You can also connect with me on Instagram at czim_realtor or visit my website at www.christinazimmerman.com.